author Kelly Daniels will be reading from his memoir, Cloudbreak California, on Thursday, May 23rd, at Michigan News Agency in Kalamazoo. Cloudbreak California begins with Daniels' father confessing to murdering a man and disappearing shortly afterward. The story then follows Daniels as he travels and lives in Mexico, Central America, and, of course, California. And now Kelly Daniels is here with me on the phone. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much.
So, not to skip to the end, but the book leaves you at college in Atlanta. How did you end up getting your PhD at Western Michigan University?
Well, I got an MFA at Georgia State University, and I read somewhere that an MFA and a dollar will get you on the subway. That's not always true. A lot of my friends have been very successful with an MFA, but I didn't have any significant publications, and I just wasn't qualified to do anything with a master's degree. And I got sick of applying for jobs and getting turned down, and so I applied to PhD programs instead and actually got several invitations, which felt good to finally have somebody want me. And I chose Western Michigan largely because of Jamie Gordon and Stuart Dybeck, who both taught there at the time, and it was the right decision looking back now. But that's how I ended up in Kalamazoo.
And so most of the story revolves around the relationship with you and your father. Describe what your parents were like when you were growing up.
Well, my father wasn't around much, but when he was always exciting. My earlier memories are when we moved to a place called Anza, California, a place in the desert with only a few hundred people scattered around big rocks and cactus, big red ants and that kind of thing. And I lived there with my mother and my brother, and my father would just show up with holes in his jeans and a old guitar case slung over his back and just show up and take me out hitchhiking to the coast or something like that. My mother was living a natural lifestyle, you might say. She was gardening and had dreams of having animals. Before that, we lived in a step van that had been converted for living with bunks and ice chest and a propane stove, traveling around. We lived in a commune in Hawaii for a while. And eventually, my mother got interested in religion, and she joined what some would consider a cult. Others would call it a Christian sect. But that really kind of took over, and we started moving closer to civilization at that point. But that's a snapshot of my folks. Just they were first like the early generation hippies. I was born in 1967. They were both, my father was 18 and my mother was 19, I believe, when I was born. And so they were just kids, and they bought into the countercultural movement completely without a lot of education or resources to make it work. And so it was always an adventure, you might say.
Now, the book starts out with your dad's confession to you about the murder. And were you surprised? I mean, these very nature-loving people, were you surprised that your father could do something like this?
Yeah, I was stunned completely. On the other hand, he wasn't a peace-loving person necessarily. He was more of an outlaw. I didn't think he was capable of murder, and I don't think he thought he was capable of it either. But I did see him. He was a surfer, and surfers then and probably now are very territorial and very local, and it's not unheard of for somebody to get beat up if they show up at the wrong surf spot and they're not local enough or they don't act quite the way that you're supposed to, their etiquette isn't quite right. And so he was a tough guy, and sort of a small in stature, but really muscular and athletic. And so I saw him a few times act aggressive, but it was more like if he got in a fist fight, that wouldn't have surprised me at all. But I didn't know that he was toting guns and that kind of business at all.
You describe a very peculiar feeling when he tells you about what he's done. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, it still confuses me a little bit today, but the first reaction upon hearing it, it was a surreal sensation, and just my senses got heightened. I started seeing things very, very clearly, like I was looking through them. Binoculars or something. Everything was real close and vivid, and it was a real high. I was in ninth grade, and it just was this. It was very exciting, and it was mostly a positive feeling, and just in terms of the rush, even as I knew that it was a terrible thing that had happened, and. But it felt like suddenly my life had become, I think I used this terminology in the book, that suddenly my life had become like a movie or something like that, and almost a James Bond kind of thing, which is funny to think back because it was a fairly, not a very newsworthy murder as far as murders go. They're pretty, I hate to say it, but they're commonplace in our society. But for me, a kid in ninth grade, it was like, wow, things are really happening, and it was strange. I'm still kind of trying to figure out where that comes from.
And I remember in part of the book, your dad tells you something about that it's a possibility that the person who he killed, his son, could one day come after you. And then we have all of these narratives of you going to all of these different places, you know, especially in the Spanish-speaking world. And do you feel like it was that kind of almost being followed kind of quality that made you have this feeling of always needing to travel?
I think that's a great reading, and I would encourage that kind of reading. These days, I'm, among other things, I teach literature, and I always want people to read books in novel ways. I don't know that I was thinking that at the time. I thought that the son, this kind of mystery person who is going to come after me someday, was just added to the kind of romance that my life took on in my own imagination at that point, that I was being stalked. And I like the idea that I was running from that. I think I was running from something else, though, as well, and that is the kind of dawning realization that I wasn't special, you know, that there was nothing romantic about what had happened, and my father made a really bad move, and I was the kid, and that was it, and I was heading toward being nobody special in life, especially into my 20s, where people were starting to get jobs and do things, and I really, all I could do was wait tables. It was my only real marketable skill. And so Central America and Mexico were exotic locales, and I felt like I was special, like I was meant for something, and everybody does feel like that at some point or another, but I held on to that for much longer than I probably should have. And so I was trying to make the special thing happen by living this risky way and throwing myself into the jungle, essentially. But yeah, I do like that idea that I was running away from imminent danger, even.
And do you feel like you have become that person that you wanted to be based on these travels?
Yes and no. I'm really incredibly happy these days, and I think things have turned out better than I probably would have imagined. I do remember thinking in like junior high, I had a teacher say, you should think about what you're going to be when you're 40. And I thought, you know what, a college professor, that would be pretty cool. You know, I imagine college professors as having long hair and, you know, smoking cigarettes, I guess, or something like that. But on the other hand, I also imagined that person I was imagining was a globetrotter, an adventurer, an Indiana Jones kind of figure, and I'm certainly not that. I still kind of yearn for that, I have to say. The book ends on this real strong sense of conclusion, but the reality of life is that things don't really conclude, and I still have that part of me who yearns to just go back to the jungle and just keep doing that, keep looking for that thing that I don't even know what it is. But instead, I'm quite settled and pretty normal and middle class these days, I guess.
So, and you can answer this however you want, I guess, with either the situation with your father or traveling to all of these different places, but how has that experience changed you?
Well, that's a good question, and it's not an easy one for me to answer, because all I could do is think back and imagine that I hadn't done any of this, and I can imagine that I, in that alternate universe, I could picture myself having more money and a bigger house, and probably still living in California, probably not far from where I lived, and not being a writer. Can't imagine being a writer if I hadn't had the life I'd lived. I guess something about my past really made it seem important that I wanted to tell stories. I guess it made me who I am, and who I am is probably a pretty complicated subject. I do feel different from a lot of my colleagues and the people I hang out with on a regular basis. I feel a little bit grungier inside, I guess, and not in a guilty way, but just I feel like I've been scraped up a little bit in ways that I kind of sense a kind of polish on some of the people that I know in this, in the world that I exist in now, which is the world of polite, well-educated, wonderful people. I feel a little scuffed up, and that's okay. I'm probably sort of proud of that in a weird way.
Yeah, a little bit of wisdom, that earthly
yeah.
wisdom. I think the book reveals a lot about how we feel about our parents and how complicated that can be. In many parts of the book, you explain, you know, some things that you don't quite like about your father's personality. But then in other parts of the book, you talk about how much you want to be a surfer just like him. And you often sort of judge your life based on what he would think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I think that it's hard not to want to be accepted by your father, regardless of how much respect you have for him on a kind of outside objective view. And so, yeah, I think everybody has, to put it in kind of a cliche way, there's the heart and the head. And I think that my intellect has always known who he is and his faults, but yet still, you just can't help wanting what you want, whether it makes sense or not. And surfing is very cool, you know. There's just surfers are, everybody likes surfer. I've never met anybody, except maybe in California, who really knows a lot of surfers. But most people just think, oh yeah, surfing, what a life, and what a, especially that older generation surfer before they got into contests and wave bashing and all that. They were these soul surfers, you know. They just wanted to commune with nature and hang out with dolphins, and that's real. That whole going out in the waves and thing really is a connection to nature that is unlike almost anything else I can think of. So I still respect that part of my father, that he's dedicated his life to this thing, and although he's made many, many mistakes, he's still doing it, and he's in damn good shape for somebody as old as he is, and that's also something I kind of aspire to and respect.
And do you surf now?
not. I live on the Mississippi River, and the surf isn't all that.
Oh, that's right.
There, but, no, I don't. I don't go back to California enough to really. It's a very hard sport. I never mastered it. I would love to. About 2 or 3 years ago, I went out on a bodyboard. I was in California. Actually, got married there. I don't know where I got the bodyboard, just borrowed it or something, but ended up paddling out into some waves, and I'd kind of lost some of my ability to read the waves just because the years had gone by, and it was a little bit frustrating that I wasn't that good at it, but it's a fun sport. Maybe someday I'll retire or something in a place with waves and get back into it.
All right, and hopefully I'll see you at the reading on May 23rd at Michigan News Agency.
Well, I'll be there.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Rebecca.